I'm Jason Michael Perry, man with three first names. This is Thoughts on Tech and Things, where we cut through the noise around emerging technology and look at what it actually means for work, life, and business. This week, we're doing something a little different. Every quarter, I host a panel for the Agile Global Innovation Series with the World Trade Center Institute. And we thought it would be great to bring this most recent conversation to the podcast. This session focuses on quantum, and this was a seriously amazing group of people that I had the chance to talk with. Dr. John Sawyer from the University of Maryland, who played a major role in building this region's quantum ecosystem. Jessica Pons, who's the CFO of StrangeWorks and a leader in quantum commercialization. And Dr. Rick Muller, who was a former national lab leader and now is the VP of quantum computing at IonQ. We kick things off with opening remarks from Jeremy Rosendale, the World Trade Center Institute's VP of Membership and Business Development, and Kim Mensel from the Maryland Department of Commerce, who leads the state's strategy across cybersecurity, aerospace, AI, and quantum. From there, we dug into some big questions. What does quantum actually mean? What is this thing? How to make sense of some of the words like qubits, superposition, entanglement, and what is Q-Day, and what does that mean for business? Also, how is Maryland positioning itself as a global player in this space called quantum? Now, I tried my best to demystify the language along the way, but quantum, well, quantum is still quantum. So buckle up and enjoy.
Good afternoon. I am Jeremy Rosendale. For those of you I have not met, I'm Vice President of Membership Business Development for the World Trade Center Institute. Welcome to our first timers here for Agile. It is one of our member series, but we love to open up to some invited guests and special guests, and that's who each of you are. So welcome, and a big welcome to our members that are here for your support and joining us. So we're really excited to be at the Maryland Innovation Center. A big thank you to Jennifer Jones and Bob Zhang from Howard County Economic Development for hosting us. They're a member and partner of WTCI, and we're really excited to be able to use this space and be close to the home of quantum in Maryland and have a really great panel. I'll invite Bob up real quick to welcome you to the MIC.
Well, thank you, Jeremy. Well, welcome to Howard County, everybody. Jennifer Jones will be here, but she's running a little late. So on her behalf, she want to welcome you guys to the Howard County Economic Development Authority, which is also home to the MIC or Maryland Innovation Center. So for anyone who's starting a company or is looking to grow your company, so this could be a good place to start. A few years ago, I'm from the background. I'm from a tech background, so we're talking about like AI and all that, and now it's the reality, right? So you got to chase the AI and be doing AI, have AI solutions. But quantum is here too. I think really a company needs to learn how what it is, how that may impact your company, and so you can pivot and innovate. So in here, we have a lot of cybersecurity defense tech companies. So this is not going to be the first event, but we just want to thank all the panelists and also the entire WTCI team for hosting this event. Again, welcome. Look forward to the event. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Bob. So WTCI is a mostly private sector run membership organization, but we also work closely with the state of Maryland, in particular the Maryland Department of Commerce, who is our founding member. So when we have these events and we work closely with the state on their top priorities, and quantum certainly is one of those priorities. So to help introduce briefly an intro to Maryland's role and dedication to quantum, I'd like to invite our friend Kim Mensel. It's a pretty good title here, so I want to make sure I get it right. Director of Cybersecurity Lead for Emerging Technologies with the Office of Cybersecurity for the Maryland Department of Commerce. Kim?
Thank you, Jeremy. Much appreciation for that. Good evening, everyone. My name is Kimberly Mensel. As Jeremy had noted, I am the Director of Cybersecurity and Emerging Technologies. What does that mean? AI and quantum specifically. And of course, tonight you have this wonderful panel sitting in front of you. But I just wanted to cover some of what Maryland's doing in terms of our economic development in quantum, because quantum is huge. It is something that is vitally important to our economy, not only here in Maryland, not only at a national level, but also at a global level. So one of the things that we established is our lighthouse sectors in the state of Maryland. What they are there are three sectors, computational biology, PNT, position, navigation, and timing in terms of aerospace and quantum technologies. Lighthouse sectors, though, these are a way that that's guiding us. Okay, we think about a lighthouse. They guide ships in out of the sea, right? So we're looking at lighthouses in the same way. These are sectors that we're placing a lot of bets on. They have strong assets and great opportunities. So in terms of that, we're looking at building quantum technologies. Notice I did not say quantum computing. Okay, that was the first thing. Quantum technologies encompasses a lot more. I'm going to let these lovely individuals discuss that. But that's really, really important. It is more than quantum computing, and I'm sure they won't get into that. But as far as the economic development across the state, we're really focusing on three different sectors. We're looking at expansion of our strategic clusters. We're looking at our quantum research hubs, of course, down at University of Maryland College Park with our Discovery District. We just had an announcement with Microsoft with their Quantum Research Center. We're very excited for that. We have our quantum materials hub that we're currently working on in a different area across Maryland. We've got prototyping facilities that we're also developing. We want to bridge those gaps with dedicated manufacturing and clean room facilities to give companies affordable access beyond NIST and beyond APL. We also are looking at enabling technologies, investing strategically in enabling technologies, photonics integration, crypto electronics, and advanced packaging. All of these things are supporting that quantum ecosystem that we're developing. And when I say ecosystem, I mean it's everybody. And it spreads across all different sectors. So we're looking at life sciences, we're looking at manufacturing, we're looking at defense, all these different areas. It's just like cybersecurity. If you just talk to another cyber company, all you're doing is talking back and forth. Who needs the cybersecurity? The customers need cybersecurity. So that's who the quantum companies are also talking to, right? What problems are they solving? What does that look like? And how do we get there? So in terms of that, we're also looking at building these global partnerships. We have our soft landing program, which, of course, we're out. We're working with different companies. We've got FDI, our foreign direct investment. In fact, we're going to Canada next week. Not me. Sorry. I was at the UK and Ireland and Scotland over the summer looking at their different assets for quantum. And it is we are out there. We are listening. We are hearing. And Maryland's name is out there for quantum. You're like, oh, we're a small state. We're small, but we're mighty. Okay. And they look at Chicago, they look at Colorado, they look at Maryland. And that is really important for us. So we have staked a claim here and we are continuing to grow. Okay. The one of the last things that we're really looking at is the workforce development issue. And everybody, in order to have great quantum companies, you need great people to be there. And right now there is there's a struggle for talented quantum enabled or quantum individuals. Okay. So we're working with the universities. We're working with different organizations, in order to develop this type of talent. And it's not just PhDs, ladies and gentlemen. We're also hearing, and this is from, global companies at QWC, the Quantum World Congress that we heard, for every one PhD, it takes three quantum technicians to back that person. So think about that. Those are different careers that we're building. That's workforce development that we're looking at. So we're not only involving our PhD programs at our major facilities or our major institutions, but we're also looking at community colleges. We're looking at our high school. We're looking at, K through 12. So all these different places. We need to take quantum and normalize it across all of these sectors. It has to be like cyber. If you asked 20 years ago, it was information assurance, and everybody said, oh, yeah, okay, my password, 123. How many of you had that password? Don't raise your hand. I don't want to know. You'll just upset me. So now, of course, security is a natural part. Well, quantum is also going to become a natural part of our lives. I'm not saying it's the appropriate technology, bless you, for every single problem that comes along, but it definitely has its place, and it's just growing and developing every single day. And I'm going to let these fine ladies and gentlemen expound upon that factor. But Maryland is here to support quantum. We're here to stay, and we're going to continue building. So thank you for your support.
Thank you very much, Kim. And with that, turn it over to our trusted senior advisor, Jason Michael Perry, to kick it off.
Thanks, Jeremy. Thanks, everyone. So how are you all doing today? All right. I'm glad to hear that. So as Jeremy said, I'm Jason Michael Perry. I always like to say I'm the man with three first names. I'm also a senior advisor here with the World Trade Center Institute. I oversee our Corporate Innovation Group, as well as the Agile Speaker Series, which if this is not your first one, you have to make sure that you come to all of them because they're amazing. In addition to that, I run a company called Perry Labs, where I help companies with AI innovation. I'm the author of a book called The AI Innovation that speaks to the role of the Chief AI Officer. I write a newsletter that you should check out. It's a weekly newsletter called Thoughts on Tech and Things. And we just launched a podcast in partnership with WYPR that has the same name. And we're on episode 4, so I'm super excited about that. And we talk a lot about technology and things that are happening. But, of course, let's get into quantum. Now, I don't know how old everyone in here is. I can make some guesses by polling and looking around. But whenever I think of quantum, the first thing that pops in my head is this old TV show called Quantum Leap. And when I ask my kids about quantum, they're like Ant-Man Quantumanium. And apparently when I talk to these experts over here, these things don't really have much to do about quantum. And I think that's important because this word sounds so amazing, sounds so futuristic. It sounds like it has so much possibility. But the real question I have for all of you is, do you even know what it really means? Do you know the impact that it's going to have? Do you know how it potentially is going to impact your businesses? And I've been surprised to find that for most people, that's a resounding no. Most people don't know what it means. And so my goal here in this panel is to first start by having a group here that can unpack this and talk about what does this thing really mean? And then from there, for us to get into a conversation about how we can use quantum in our businesses to do more, but also how is this impacting the greater Maryland ecosystem? And so I'm really excited to be joined by a really amazing panel. I'm super excited for this group. So I'll start with Rick Muller to my right. Now, Rick previously was the director of ARPA as well as the Quantum San Diego National Labs. But now he is working with a group called IonQ. I don't know, it's a little company here in Maryland, something like that. Yeah, but which, you know, is a big company in the name of quantum. So I'm very happy to have him here. He's now a VP of quantum computing over at IonQ, and I'm excited to hear more from him. Next to Rick, I have Jessica Pons. Jessica is the chief financial officer of a company called StrangeWorks. She has an extensive experience in growing and scaling technology startups from seed to acquisition. I'm also joined by John Sawyer. John is the Director of Strategic Research Initiatives for the University of Maryland. He also has helped to lead the development of our regional quantum ecosystem for the last 6 years as the Executive Director of the Mid-Atlantic Quantum Alliance. So say hello to our panel. So I want to start with exactly the thing that I think I led in with the intro. This isn't sci-fi, right? So what I'm hoping is that, and I'm hoping we can start with you, Rick, and you, John, if you can just help unpack, what is quantum? What's quantum mechanics? What are these words, quantum computing? Like, what is this?
Okay, let me take a stab at this. So quantum mechanics refers to some of the physics that was developed around 100 years ago. And what they noticed was that systems behave differently at a very small scale than they do at a very large scale. And so, you know, among them is the fact that energy levels and colors and things like that aren't distributed continuously, but they're at a set of discrete states. And that was what quantum represented, that there was a kind of finite amount of energy that could go into these states. And that seems very esoteric, and it doesn't apply to us. But, you know, the screens we use all depend upon quantum mechanics, and the computers we use and the phones we use, all of those things are dependent upon quantum mechanics. Now, when people talk about quantum as an industry, they're really talking about quantum information science, which combined quantum mechanics with the information science that was developed in the mid-20th century at places like Bell Labs. And it really came from taking the implications of quantum mechanics seriously for information science, because once you're used to solving for quantum systems, they do things that feel very natural. But in terms of information, it doesn't kind of make sense. And so the kind of two best examples of this, one of them is Schrodinger's cat, right? And so the German physicist Ernst Schrodinger came up with this thought experiment where he said you're going to have some experiment and there's going to be a cat in a box and there's a 50-50 chance that, let's be kind to cats, and say that a sleeping potion is released into the box and that before you open the box, you don't know whether the cat is awake or asleep. And that seems kind of weird, you know, but that has real implications for the way that we can do things like computation, because we're not used to computer states being somewhere between on and off. They're either on or they're off. And the other thing is kind of harder to explain, but it goes by the word entanglement. And it came from, you know, the most where you might have come across it before is in Albert Einstein's kind of put down of quantum mechanics as spooky action at a distance. One of the things you notice is that you can set up states between particles so that their measurements are correlated even if they're a long way away, even if they're separated by, you know, a greater distance than light can travel in a limited amount of time. And, you know, again, those are things that, you know, when I was an undergraduate, I'm like, oh, this is cool. It's so weird. It's never going to be boring. Not true. But what is fun is that these very weird science fiction-y things are what give it practical applications that go beyond what we can do using classical computing or classical sensing or classical networking.
So Rick, if I could, and I'm also curious.
I was thinking maybe it's time for somebody else to talk.
The way that I've understood this, the Schrodinger's cat example, is that there are, in classical computing, there is this idea of binary, right? It's ones and zeros. It's on or off, and that's the idea of classical computing. But the idea here in quantum computing is that there could be endless states, but you only really know what the state is when you open the box, right?
Yeah, maybe another way to say it is that you can have arbitrary mixtures of the cat being awake and asleep. So it can be 90% awake and 10% asleep. But when you open the box, the cat is either awake or asleep. Mm-hmm. And that's the really weird thing. And another kind of famous scientist, Richard Feynman, said, you know, after the end, you know, he said there was this statement made about general relativity, that it was such a strange theory that only two people in the world understood it or something like that. And he said, I don't know if that was ever the case. You know, there might have been a time where only one person understood it. But, you know, as soon as he explained it to a bunch of different people, you know, everyone kind of got the math and physics behind it. And then he went on to say, but I don't think anyone understands quantum mechanics. Mm-hmm. And that whole measurement thing, that whole thing that the cat's alive and dead, but when you mention it, when you measure it, you don't get a superposition state. You get the cat's either awake or asleep.
So if I could say,
and that's the measurement problem, and that's what's really weird, so that even if you've been doing it for 25 or 30 years, sometimes you kind of look at that and you think, why in the world would a system act that way? But it has implications for computation and networking and sensing.
So I'm going to toss this to you, John. So Rick has already used some of these words, but I was hoping that we could maybe just have a little bit of understanding of some of the language that I expect may be thrown around. Qubit, right? There's also superposition. There's also entanglement, which are some of the core terms. I don't know if you could take a stab at, you know, trying to give us like the I don't know, whenever you go to a cocktail party, how you would describe these things, you know, when you're like, hey, let me tell you about entanglement.
So just to touch on a couple of things that Rick highlighted. So one of the ways I like to explain what quantum really is basically when you zoom in far enough, the universe essentially becomes pixelated. So I think we can all kind of understand that as a nice analogy of there are these discrete breaks between one pixel and the next, between one amount of energy, between one quantum state or another. And because you have this step function, you all of a sudden can do some very interesting things. So the math as well as the engineering lets you do some really, really, really cool stuff. The other thing I usually try to emphasize is, as Rick highlighted, this is nothing new. quantum mechanics has been around for just over a century. So we are in what we like to call quantum 2.0. Quantum 1.0 is basically we were able to do a lot of the really cool technologies that shaped the 20th and into the early 21st century. So how many of you have had an MRI? Yeah, that's a quantum technology. How many of you have ever used a laser? DVD, CD? Yeah, that's a quantum technology. How many of you have ever used a computer? So transistors, those are all using quantum mechanics. The difference is, instead of looking at ensembles of systems, so sort of the quantum mechanics acting together in a large group that we're able to engineer, the difference today is that we're now able to engineer things at that single atom scale. And so we're able to unlock a lot of those cool, weird properties of quantum mechanics to do things that we couldn't do in the ensemble, but we can also control it in ways that we never could before. So to your question about some of the key terms, a qubit, as Rick was saying, the cat can be either alive or dead or some combination of the two until you measure it, right? So that is a qubit. It, when you measure it, it will become a classical bit, a one or a zero. But you are able to have whatever kind of probabilities that you want to sort of impose on your qubit, and you can manipulate it while it is in a superposition state. And this is one of the things that lets us do some really interesting things, like running things through a series of gates where it's one and a zero at the same time, and you're able to change the probabilities. You can do a whole bunch of different complex manipulations of your system. And then at the end, you read it out. And one of the other things to kind of highlight that's a little bit different from a classical computer is that we're talking about probabilistic systems, right? So you're not going to just read it once and you get your answer, and every time you do it, you're going to get exactly the same answer. You run it 1,000 times, 10,000 times, and you get the probability distribution. But where you see the answer the most is likely to be the universally right answer. So you don't have to worry about some of the heuristics that you get on the classical system that lead you down the blind alleys of suboptimal solutions. I think Rick already really talked about entanglement, but that is actually one of those critical things. So in a quantum computer, you have the ability to have multiple qubits that are entangled, which means you can then manipulate them. So you can manipulate one and it'll influence what the other one is, but you can end up with a large set of entangled qubits where you get a vast search space or a set of states that you can manipulate and compute. So I believe that at, what is it, 300 qubits, we're looking at more states than there are atoms in the universe, right? So you're quickly talking about very, very large things. But the one caveat that I do want to highlight is this is not classical information. So how you're going to be able to process it, how you're going to be able to manipulate it is going to be a little bit different. And so a big part of what we're trying to do in the ecosystem is to have these initial conversations to help build the relationships with people with really hard problems that classical computers can't do in a reasonable time, like 10,000 years, 12 million years. And we can help you think through how can you change those things to unlock solutions that you never even thought you should be asking the questions for.
All right. So now that we have an understanding of quantum, do you all feel educated? All right, I'm glad. Well, I have to ask, Brick, can you tell us what exactly is IonQ? What does it do now that we're armed with this knowledge?
Okay, so IonQ was the first pure-play quantum company, the first company that only does quantum, to go public in the U.S., and it's the largest one now. Foundationally, what we have mostly done is quantum computation. So exploring how quantum effects can be harnessed to make specific types of computation faster. So when Kim was talking about the lighthouses in the state of New Mexico, Sorry. I lived in New Mexico for 22 years. It's
I hope they're not lighthouses in New Mexico. That's a
not a lot of ships in New Mexico.
Global warming is worse than I thought.
Yeah. Lighthouses in Maryland. She mentioned computational biology. And computational biology is one of these areas that we think can be dramatically accelerated by using by harnessing quantum effects. But quantum has a lot of facets to it, and it can also accelerate networking. It can make networking more secure, and it can make sensing more sensitive. And so Kim also mentioned position navigation and timing calculations, and that's mm-hmm. That's another one of the major applications of quantum technologies that IonQ also works in. We can make the most accurate clocks in the world. We can make, just as a brag from my previous center, one of the researchers in the previous center I used to run made a clock so accurate that you could raise it a centimeter and it would feel the gravitational redshift effect from relativity on the time constant just by raising it a centimeter. That was Jin Yi's work at University of Colorado. So you can make really accurate clocks. You can make really accurate sensors that can do things like sense acceleration so well that you can navigate in GPS denied environments, let's say. So IonQ tries to explore synergies between all of these different quantum technologies. And looks to things like, you know, secure space networking and, other ways that you can combine quantum technologies to change the world.
All right. I appreciate that. So, Jessica, you're up. So one of the things that I remember us talking, we always do a pre-conversation. We talk about some of the things that are happening. And you said this thing that was interesting about being in Japan. And having a conversation with business leaders, I think it was Japan, and having a conversation with, I think, a real estate business where they showed up with their quantum engineers. And I don't know, that just, for me, that made me realize how much is happening, how much of this, like, business world is developing. And I was hoping that you can maybe kind of set the stage for the business opportunities that are here in quantum.
Yeah, I mean, so StrangeWorks really approaches quantum from a business perspective, right? Like, our customers are large enterprise customers that we want to provide real business impact to. And for most people and most enterprises, that means cost savings, right? And so we are working with folks to analyze their business on an introspective way, like what can we make better, faster, smarter, and more efficient. And so when we're having discussions with groups that are quantum aware, right, and bring their quantum engineer, the conversation goes straight to some of the technologies that are available, like IonQ. But from a business perspective, an enterprise perspective, we really need to be thinking about quantum as a feature and a solution that is here today, right? We have problems in our businesses that are very large that can be solved and can be made better. And that real business impact is kind of hanging out there for all of us to go out and grasp if we just ask ourselves the questions of what we need to make better.
And I probably should have led with this question. StrangeWorks is a quantum business that's not directly a quantum business. And so I would love if you could explain a little bit about your business and how you play into this larger quantum ecosystem.
Yeah, so we come at it from a software perspective and a solutions perspective. We kind of are seen in the industry as the universal broker of quantum. We have connections with almost all of the hardware providers, as well as where we have partnerships with most of the major, like, algorithms and solvers and things like that that are available. And so our network is really deep. And when we come to a customer, we can really come to them and figure out what their particular issue is that they're trying to solve for their business. If that's like, say, we're talking to, you know, an airline or an airport, we can, you know, solve gate assignments or different things like that. That's a very classic example of being able to apply quantum to a real business problem today, like any inefficiencies at an airport, which we know can impact costs significantly, right? And so if you can get those down to a T and really like solve that problem using the technologies that are available with quantum, you can save a lot of money.
So I'm curious for, you know, knowing that businesses are quantum aware, if, you know, and this is for everyone, anyone who has an answer, if there are some good case studies that for business leaders and executives that that you could share that would put in perspective some of the things that they should be thinking about in terms of the impact that quantum may have in their businesses long-term and short-term.
Yeah, I mean, there are some really great case studies. Erebus published a whole data set with a bunch of case studies for, you know, aerospace in particular and gate assignments and cargo loading and different things like that. So that's, you know, something that you can find that's just out there and publicly available so you can really understand and begin to understand the impact of being able to make business decisions using quantum technologies. I think, you know, a lot of other industries, when you think about logistics and supply chain, and then, you know, in finance, portfolio optimization, those are different areas that have really shown benefit from applying quantum technologies today and have really, like, proved effective in being able to use the technologies that are ready right now. There are a lot of different areas of business where you can kind of be exploratory, right, in parallel path. Like, is this, you know, better using a classical resource or is it better right now using a quantum resource? But eventually it'll be to the point where, like, if you haven't explored the quantum aspect of it, you might be behind your competitors and your peers.
Anything from you two? Any other case studies?
You know, so those are great examples. You know, my background is in material science and chemistry, and there are a lot of just kind of fascinating things that we can do. You know, I mentioned computational biology and drug design, you know, so the things, you know, so the calculations that we solve to model how a pharmaceutical works, we can only approximate using classical computing resources. So there's, you know, so much of my career was spent figuring out smarter ways to make those approximations. What quantum computers open up is the ability to solve those exactly. And so there's the real possibility that, you know, if a pharma company had, you know, 100 candidates, you could, you know, focus in on the 3 or 4 best candidates rather than having to synthesize and test all of those. And you can make similar arguments for materials, right? If you want better materials for space exploration or for, any other, you know, thing where you're stressing a material at high temperatures and pressures, let's say, quantum does that. Just since we've been talking mostly about computation, I also want to stress the other two aspects of it. So you can sense not only position, but you can sense electromagnetic fields very accurately. So people are now selling applications where you can navigate based on magnetic maps people have of the United States just by sensing the magnetic fields in the ground. So sensing's another application, and then networking's another application. So you can make networks that are sensitive enough that you can tell when there's an eavesdropper listening in on your communications, based on encoding that communication in quantum properties of materials.
So I was also going to go in the direction of sensing. So probably my favorite quantum startup, I don't count INQ as a startup anymore, is a company called Hyperfine. So this is using a technology called NV Diamond, so nitrogen vacancy diamond, where you basically shine a green light on a diamond where you've poked a hole in it, and instead of having one carbon, or you knock out a carbon and replace it with a nitrogen, and you end up with what we call an artificial atom. So you shine it with the green light, and depending on its quantum state, you get a red light or a red photon coming out. Because you're able to do this and the incredible sensitivity for these magnetometers, you can now have what is essentially a crash cart that has diagnostic quality MRI, where you don't need a multi-million dollar shielded facility. You don't have to worry, does the patient have keys in their pocket? And if I turn this machine on, someone's going to die. But literally, it's on a cart. You can take it up to them, bring it to the bedside, bring it to the rural hospitals where access to these kinds of things just isn't possible. So this is something on the sensing side. On the networking side, this is actually one of the really cool and exciting but probably longer-term set of applications where we could theoretically have a world-sized telescope. By basically entangling sensors at one end of the pole to the other or around the equator, however you want to configure it, where you're able to measure things at a much larger scale and sort of open the mysteries of the universe in a way that we can't even really fully fathom right now. Going back to the computing side, because I think that's why most of you are here, I was literally on a call earlier today with a number of computational fluid dynamicists who were looking at some really cool applications of quantum-inspired algorithms, so things that they can run on a classical simulator right now, but it's leveraging the computational power of a quantum computer that as INQ and other systems get bigger and have more of these qubits, we're going to get to the point where we can't simulate it classically. But we're already seeing the ability to do some of these hyperscale type simulations much faster and much more accessibly using some of these much, much simpler systems.
Yeah, that's super interesting. So I'm going to change topic a little bit. I'm going to go to security and some of the fears around this. So if you all remember that show Quantum Leap, when I said that, then you're probably also old enough to remember this thing called Y2K. You remember? It was a thing, right? Everybody, was freaking out that their computers were going to end. And there's a similar conversation that's happening now with the point where with quantum, and this sits around encryption. Technology. Even if you don't really think about encryption, if you use a password manager, if you use WhatsApp or Signal or Apple Messages, and you feel comfortable knowing that all of your bank account information is encrypted in both as it moves and also in some cases things like passwords and state, there's that comfort of just knowing that you don't have to worry, right? All your stuff's protected. But I think that there's a new day, kind of like a Y2K. It has a special name. I don't know who wants to start off with that.
Yeah, so what Jason's talking about is called Q-Day, and Q-Day is the day that we think a sufficiently powerful quantum computer will arise to break the public key cryptosystems we use to encrypt information. And so basically, when people set up in encryption systems, you want something that is easy to verify if you have the right answer, but hard to compute if you don't. So one of the things that they settled on was multiplying two numbers together. So if I ask you for the factors of 143, it might take you a minute to figure those out. But if I give you 11 and 13, you can multiply those really, really easily together. And that's actually the trick that a lot of our public key cryptosystems use, just with much, much larger numbers. And based on what we can do with classical computers, they can assure people that, roughly it would take the age of the universe to break some of these cryptography systems that we use to transmit our bank or our credit card information. The problem with that is that quantum computers can be shown to break some of those assumptions. They can actually factor numbers much faster than a classical computer can. And so, you know, we used to think that it was still about 10 years off. I think, you know, my company's position is that within the next 3 or 4 years, we could see the cryptography, you know, behind security, behind like internet encryption, and behind things like Bitcoin could be broken. Now, thankfully, another proud Maryland institution, the National Institutes of Standards and Technology, has been working for 10 years now developing post-quantum cryptographic standards. And if you talk to a cryptographer, what they'll tell you is, you know, the only guarantee is having lots and lots of really experienced cryptographers look at a cryptosystem and poke at it and try to break it. That's the only way you really know that it's safe. And that's why NIST 10 years ago started putting out requests for proposals for systems that couldn't be broken by a quantum computer. And a couple, about a year and a half ago, I think they released the final four candidates that they think really, you know, cannot be broken by a quantum computer. And they use something called a lattice cryptosystem, which I don't even fully understand, but it is, you know, it we've looked at it very hard for a long time, and we think those are secure. The other protection, as I mentioned before, is quantum networking. So you can use quantum states to encrypt the key distribution you do in such a way that no information is transmitted if somebody's listening on that line. So the nice thing about the quantum networking solutions is they're not based upon a mathematical problem and, you know, saying, well, there's this hard math problem and you don't understand it, but trust me, nobody will ever break this. So you can use the kind of quantum states of matter themselves to transmit information.
So I want to stay on that for a second, because there's this, I'm assuming, just going to ask, have any of you received an email from a company saying that their platform has been hacked and maybe you use that platform? Any of you?
Yeah.
At least one person. Okay. You know, so that's a thing, because one of the things that potentially happens is maybe you can't break this stuff now, but you can store it and then potentially break it in the future. And we're just starting to hear, I think it may be Signal, I'm not sure what messaging company, was the first time that I've heard exactly what we were talking about, Rick, that this was quantum level encryption that was starting to be used in certain products and business. Which, I don't know how many of you have heard that, but this is a big thing. 3 years could be a point where all of the encryption that you're using for banking is suspect. And so it's a perfect time to start, as an organization, a business, wondering what do you do to start to put these protections in place to make sure that when it does happen, that you're safeguarding all this information.
So I'm happy to start this, but I have a feeling my fellow panelists will also have some really good perspectives. So the federal government is investing, $10 billion over the next decade to transition over to a post-quantum cryptographic set of systems. That makes total sense for the feds. I am personally, this is a personal opinion here, a little bit skeptical that we as individuals need to have quite that same level of concern. But the corporate entities and the infrastructure and the state governments should definitely be looking at this very, very closely. So one of the reasons I highlight my skepticism is we're really talking about risk management. So do you have secrets that in 3 years according to INQ, 10 years according to others, 20 to 30 years according to the more skeptical folks, do you have a secret that will, if it is revealed in that time frame, be damaging? Is the level of damage going to be sufficient that you need to make the investment now? The key thing to also sort of highlight is the cost of a qubit. It's going down significantly, but it's still really expensive, And the algorithm that is used to run this is pretty time-consuming, even with a really, really good system. So the level of threat, you need to have an actor who has access to those systems. They need to have access to your encrypted information. They need to have the time and the willingness to use all of those resources to go after it. So the likelihood that they're going to go after my individual transaction with my Bank of America thing is very, very low. But if you have these very sensitive things that could be massively crippling to your business or to the national security, it is an imperative right now to start safeguarding these against those attacks. So, again, to highlight, quantum is the ability to use all of those cool quantum mechanics to do interesting computation, sensing, or networking. Post-quantum is a classical technology. So it's just using a slightly different form of, well, a very different form of math to do the encryption technology. But you do not need to be a quantum physicist in order to understand it and to implement it and get it onto your systems. So to Kim's point earlier about the job opportunities that are being created because of the quantum revolution. So a lot of those are preparing for some of the downsides that come with quantum technologies, as well as being able to help us realize all of the positive outcomes as well.
But I think since we have a CFO on our panel, she might have a unique perspective on risk assessments from, you know, a kind of corporate fiscal oversight. So, you know, how do you look at the risks that Q-Day could pose? You know, this isn't the first company you've been at a kind of senior financial position on. So, you know, how do you look at risk associated with encryption?
Yeah, I mean, I think as John said, like if in 3 to 5 years that information is going to be relevant, and for example, if you're working for a company that's like a large publicly traded enterprise, you have sensitive information, and if in real time that were to be accessed and people could make decisions and trade off of that information that they otherwise wouldn't have been able to, then you really do need to be thinking about this from a financial perspective, a risk perspective. But if you're a smaller company and the information is, you know, 3 to 5 years old, by the time it's accessed, your business is probably in a completely different spot, and the risk level for you is significantly less.
So I have one more technical question before I want to get into more about the Maryland ecosystem. And I think I'd be remiss not to ask about AI and quantum and the combination of these two technologies that's supposed to supercharge things. I would also say that, you know, Jessica, you mentioned earlier that this is a race in a lot of ways, that this is not... You know, we're talking about Maryland, but this is not a U.S.-centric thing. You know, there are a lot of other countries that are investing heavily in these technologies, and all of this is, you know, potentially coming together to create things that are amazing. I mean, quantum-powered AI? I don't know who wants to start there.
So the best example – so there are hints – that quantum can accelerate AI like it accelerates other applications. The kind of rock solid example is a little esoteric. And so it's that if you have a quantum state that you need to understand, there's an exponential speed up to learning that state using quantum calculations and measurements as opposed to using just measuring everything and doing a classical statistics on that state. Now, you might say, well, you know, I don't have a lot of quantum states sitting around, but, you know, if you think about quantum sensors, you know, you could have something like that telescope network that John mentioned at the beginning, asking the question, is that asteroid going to hit Earth? And that information might be spread over, you know, 1,000 different telescopes, and rather than just taking a statistical average of that, you can really learn that state much more accurately, much faster by doing quantum machine learning on that state. There are other hints that, you know, quantum does kind of the same thing. You know, quantum states live in this linear algebra world that are also what drive machine learning. So there are hints that some of the ways that quantum speeds up other types of computations could apply to machine learning, but we don't have any assurances except in this area of learning a quantum state.
I will second that, and I am deeply appreciative, Rick, that you're highlighting how much we do not know. So again, these systems are still in fairly early stages of development. We are just getting to the point of having physical or computing systems that are about to get past what we can simulate on classical systems. So that's where the really exciting exploration, I think, is going to be happening, where we're unlocking power that we don't even fully understand. The one other sort of tantalizing areas where I think there is some very exciting potential intersections with AI is it appears that quantum computers can help to accelerate the training on particularly sparse data. So if you have rare events, you just don't have a lot of data to do your training. It looks like there is a potential improvement in the quality of the systems that are coming out of that. The other intersection that I do want to highlight is that AI is an incredibly powerful tool that is helping us actually accelerate the development of the quantum computers themselves. So the control systems that we need to use for many of these systems, they need to be extremely fast, much faster than a human in the loop could possibly do. A graduate student isn't going to be able to sort of keep up with it, especially as these systems get larger. So having an AI system that is trained on the complexity of the system that it's controlling is helping us to get the kinds of systems that stay coherent, as in they maintain that entanglement and that superposition for the amount of time that you need to run the computation. So it's helping us improve the quality, so the amount of noise that we're able to eliminate from the system, because those are really the two things that kill a quantum computer and make a quantum sensor fantastic. They're incredibly sensitive to their environments.
Let's talk a bit about the Maryland ecosystem. Westmore, the governor, has made it very clear that quantum is incredibly important to Maryland. There's an incredible amount, Kim started with this, of the investment that's being made here. And I can't help but wonder for businesses and small and large who are in this community, you know, the opportunities that are there are here in Maryland for businesses, and maybe this is in terms of partnerships or ways to use quantum. And I'm hoping to start with you, Jessica, because I believe StrangeWorks is in a unique position in that it's like the company that helps bring, you know, people together under this quantum umbrella.
Yeah, I mean, for Maryland businesses, you really do have a unique opportunity. We have companies like IonQ and then resources like the University of Maryland that can help you explore the problems that you have that you can solve using quantum, classical, you know, quantum-inspired. I think that, you know, Maryland is a very large ecosystem that you can draw upon all of the resources, right? And if, say, you're learning to build your business, you also have a lot of resources like the Innovation Hub and different things like that.
Speaking of the Innovation Hub, right, I think, John, you're the Innovation Hub or the University of Maryland Quantum... Well, can you tell us a little bit about the University of Maryland Innovation Hub?
Sure. So Governor Moore announced the billion-dollar public-private partnership investment in the Capital of Quantum Initiative. The thing I like to emphasize is this is really at least the second billion that we are investing as a state. The amount of infrastructure and capability, so you highlighted NIST, which has been one of the world's leaders in developing quantum technologies for decades. That is situated a big chunk of it is situated at the University of Maryland in something called the Joint Quantum Institute. So this was established in 2006 with significant state and federal support to bring together the best and most amazing capabilities of both the federal and the academic partners to really drive that technology. And as a result, our region is one of the top hubs in the entire world. we've had a proliferation. One of the things I probably should have mentioned earlier is wearing my MQA hat, the Mid-Atlantic Quantum Alliance. This is a group of 52 organizations right now. It is a combination of industry, both large and small. We have startups, we have Fortune 500s, government labs, as well as academics across the region. And it's a little bit larger than Maryland, but the heavy concentration really is here and within the D.C. Immediate surroundings. So as you highlighted, Governor Moore made this announcement back in January. Just a couple months later, he signed an MOU, Memorandum of Agreement, or maybe it was understanding. It doesn't really matter, with DARPA. The Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, to support the Quantum Benchmarking Initiative. So if you have not seen the QBI, the Quantum Benchmarking Initiative, go check it out. It is probably one of the most ambitious, boldest programs that I have seen DARPA do, and that is saying a lot because DARPA has always been big thinking. So basically, this program is approaching quantum computing skeptically. We have seen enough that we think that, yes, there could very well be something very cool, but we want you to prove it to us. Can you produce something that is useful by 2033, practically useful? If you can, the floodgates are basically going to open. So it started out with two companies going into the next phase. Just last week, INQ, congratulations, was moved into that second phase. So they're doing fantastically, as well as I think it was 11 others or 10 others who went into this phase. So there is a race. It's not just a national level race, but there are lots of different technologies, largely because there are lots of different ways to produce a qubit. So anyway, the Quantum Benchmarking Hub, so the Capital Quantum Benchmarking Hub, is one of three state collaborations between DARPA with DARPA to provide the matching resources and investment in these companies to help them reach that very ambitious goal. So Microsoft was one of the first two that got to that second phase, so we were incredibly excited that they joined us in the Discovery District around College Park. Are in College Park. INQ was already there, so I'm excited to see what happens as part of the benchmarking hub. But there are a bunch of other companies that we are in talks with that you will probably start seeing their names mentioned a lot more as part of the Maryland ecosystem. But one thing I do want to highlight, or one resource that I'm hoping that you will take advantage of, is UMD partnered with INQ back in 2021 to launch something called the National Quantum Laboratory. The mission of the QLab, so qlab.umd.edu, for those of you who are writing it down, the mission of the QLab is to put qubits into the hands of users. The goal is to help accelerate the development of practical applications. So we not only provide access to the cutting-edge systems that INQ provides, there might be some other of your competitors as part of that as well, but it's healthy to have that competition within the ecosystem. But not only are we giving you time on the computers, we are giving you access to the experts who know how to use those systems and get the most out of them. Because it is really easy to waste hundreds of thousands of dollars on these systems if you don't know what you're doing and you don't understand what the sources of error, you don't understand how it's going to spit out information that's going to be useful to you. So there is a significant learning curve, and a big part of our role is to help make that as quick and easy for you as possible.
So on our way out, I would like to ask each of you one last question. If you can say in one sentence, what are you the most excited to see in the quantum space over the next decade? Whoever wants to start.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I was a quantum chemist. I really want to see these applications where we can deeply understand molecular systems, understand how chemical bonding works, and then use that to do things like make better catalysts, make better drugs, make the world a better and cleaner place. That's what excited me about quantum computing originally and still does.
I mean, being a true businesswoman, I think I'm most excited to see enterprises look at quantum as a way to actually provide efficiency and cost savings to their businesses.
And I'm going to go in a different direction and say Maryland dominating the global quantum technology market.
I think, yeah, Kim was the plant there. So please say thank you to John, Jessica, Rick for joining us. Also, I think you all can go home now and have conversations with your families about qubits, superposition, entanglement, right? Let everyone know about the fact that everything is in multiple states. There is a multiverse, like all the things, right? And of course, Q-Day. Now, I hope that you would join us back here. We're actually going to be at the Hopkins Business School in Harbor East February 10th for our next series. And I'm hoping to do a little bit of a spin of something that's been one of my more popular podcast episodes, which is this idea of what is a photo. It's a talk on cybersecurity and understanding or learning how to tell what's different. For my birthday recently, I sent a few people a Sora video of me hanging out with Sam Altman and Mark Cuban. And more people than I expected thought that it was real, that we were all on the beach having margaritas. And so, if it wasn't the case, but, this might be just a good thing for us to start to understand how much technology has changed the question of what's real and what's not real. And so that's what I'm hoping to talk about again in February. So please make sure you sign up. We'll send more information. So thank you for coming.